your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
Good day, and welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence, with Reiki Master and host, Phyllis Lee Forimoto, as she shares with you inspiring stories along with her practical wisdom for finding balance with spirit in everyday life. Now, here's your host, Phyllis Forimoto.
This is Phyllis Forimoto from Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have Chapman. He's calling in from Melbourne, Victoria in Australia. And you will be hearing us double time because there is this echo on the line. We can't seem to do anything about it, and I'm really I know that you will appreciate this interview because Eileen has for many years been associated with drug and alcohol abuse assessment and recovery clinic, and she started many years ago a Reiki treatment part of this clinic. So I'm kind of winging it, Eileen, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phyllis.
And I know that you're going to give us much more accurate information, but I at least got the gist out there.
Yes, you sure did.
I'd like to just come back to you first and hear your Reiki story, because I don't think I've heard it before, and I would really love to have this as a lead-in for our listeners.
Oh, you mean how I got into Reiki, etc.?
Yeah.
How I came to where I am now?
Yeah.
Okay, well, my Reiki story began with my running away from Reiki, actually. Yes. I kept hearing about it, and people would say, this was back in the late 80s, and they were saying things, I've done Reiki, you must do Reiki, and it all came across as a bit too evangelical to me, so I kind of ran away from it, but it kept popping its head up.
Right.
It kept popping
its head up. Sometimes comes across as evangelical, huh?
Yes.
Yes.
And I was reacting to that wrongly. Anyhow, I came up against it. I kept popping its head up, and one day in the Shiatsu clinic, where I was supervising students in their clinical practice, one of the students had to give me a treatment as part of their assessment. And at the end of a Shiatsu, you quite often just calmly place your hands on the person, on the recipient,
right.
And that's what this person did with me. And suddenly, I felt this bolt of energy shoot through me. It felt like my legs lifted off the ground. I don't think they did, but it felt like they did. I said to this young woman, "Good heavens, Estelle, whatever was that?" And she just sat there like the Buddha with her hands on me and said, "Oh, just a little bit of Reiki." And because Reiki flows, of course, whatever you're doing, if the person is receiving it open to it at some level. And so I thought, well, I really need to check this out. And within a very short time, I came across a flyer advertising a Reiki course, which I felt in tune with. And at the end of that week, actually, I was up in the country, Victoria, in a group of people learning Reiki from someone who was trained by you, actually, Claudia Hockwood. And I just was gradually blown away by this experience. Although in the beginning, I didn't really know what I had in my hands. It was only when I was treating my Shiatsu clients and they started saying to me, "Eileen, what are you doing that's different?" And I wasn't. I was quite mystified, as you can imagine. I said, "I'm not doing anything. I'm anything different. I'm just giving you a Shiatsu." And then they said, no, your hands are so warm. They're always warm, as many tactile practitioners' hands are, because
yes,
that's where your consciousness is.
Yes. Right.
But this one day this man said, no, he said, your hands are always warm, but this warmth is going right through from my back to the walls of my chest and spreading out through my body. And I thought, oh, my goodness. And then someone wanted to know why I was making them see colors. And I said, I'm not doing anything. And she was quite insistent that I was imagining colors and making her see them. And it was only when someone came to me and said, why did I see an onion during the treatment? And I said, an onion? Yes, an onion. And so he started to describe it, and he was somebody who wasn't really familiar with complementary therapies,
mm-hmm.
and this was a totally new experience for him, especially seeing an onion. So he started to describe it. He said, well, it was quite beautiful, really. It had these, like, the layers of mm-hmm. of the onion, like petals, and inside was a beautiful light. And immediately I said, oh, it sounds like a lotus. And he said, what's a lotus? And to me, that was this, you know, that's a typical symbol of the soul in the light of the soul in the lotus and the layers peel away. I knew that from my other spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite mystified. So I thought, I'm out of my league here. I don't know what's happening with this Reiki. So I sent him to a center where he could talk to somebody who would explain to him what a lotus was. I could, but I just felt overwhelmed at the time. So it was then that I began to realize I had something really significant in my hands. And one day, another of my clients who had enjoyed feeling the Reiki energy during the shiatsu. This didn't always happen, by the way, but with some people it did, and he really enjoyed that. And one day after his shiatsu treatment, I happened to mention something about a Reiki treatment. He said, what's a Reiki treatment? So I explained to him what a Reiki treatment was. And he said, you mean I could have a whole hour of that? And I said, yes. He said, oh, can I have that next time? So that is really how I began my professional practice, because people started coming to me by word of mouth and started asking for this. And it was not until later that I went back to, although I remained in contact with Claudia, that I went back and had, my master training with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really grateful for that, because she provided a really rigorous background in Reiki and laying out the master path for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was after I started the clinic, actually. So I was only 2 years in Reiki, a Reiki 2 student practitioner, when I started the clinic.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It was... I look back and I think it was quite presumptuous of me to do it at that stage.
Right. Well, it sounds like you had a lot of other experience, though, in being what I would call a public practitioner of shiatsu and
yes.
then coming into Reiki. So that gave you some perhaps more...
It did give
foundation.
Me a foundation, yes. That's right. And I was also teaching some subjects for the shiatsu school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great.
And preparing students for public practice. So we were developing competencies for shiatsu at that stage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that gave me... Yes,
yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
No, so that really gave me a foundation
uh-huh.
for... Especially when it came to developing standards for the Reiki clinic, which
yeah,
I'll talk to you about later if you want me
right.
to.
Right. Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Yes.
So tell me, how did you get into doing treatments at this clinic?
The Windana Society is an organization that has many arms. It has a drug withdrawal and assessment center. It has places for people who have gone out into the community in supported accommodation. It has a place in the country for a residential therapeutic community, which is for people up to about 12 months. And the area that I was in, when I at one stage supervising students and shiatsu in their clinical practice, was at the Wundana Community Center, which was right next door to the Drug Withdrawal Center, the Drug Withdrawal and Assessment House. I'll call it DWH in future, that's easier. I was supervising the students. We would have people coming in, sometimes people who were survivors of torture, just people from the general community, occasionally people from the DWH. And mm-hmm. I began to think, you know, really, shiatsu's wonderful, but these people should also be exposed to Reiki. And I was very inspired by the Hawaii Takata experience with Dr. Hayashi and his mm-hmm. clinic in Japan. And I thought, yes, there should be. And I started talking to people about this, and they said, oh, what a wonderful idea, Eileen. You know, why don't you do it? And I was really thinking, well, maybe somebody else more experienced than me would do it. But it's always a danger, Phyllis, to have an idea, because then everybody wants you to do that, you know, to follow you on that idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I went to the administrator and rather nervously put this forward to him, because at that stage Reiki was quite unknown. And even mm-hmm. though Wundana has a holistic philosophy of healing and recovery, and they had a student acupuncture clinic and a student naturopathy clinic, which included massage in the community center, Reiki was pretty not really well known at that stage.
Right.
And some people thought it was pretty far out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in and I explained, you know, what about Reiki and how I thought it would be perhaps a good idea to have a Reiki clinic. And he said, to my surprise, he didn't ask any more questions, maybe because he knew me from being around there and supervising the other clinic. And he just said, oh, yes, it sounds a good idea. Go for it. So then I had to do it.
Well, that's great. Well, you know, one of the things that's so interesting, and a question that I have for you right at this moment, not to interrupt you or anything, but I'm just curious about how this works with these people and touching them, because it seems like this is kind of antithesis to a lot of counseling practice that goes on in the world. And before you answer the question, we have to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be back in just a few minutes with, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence.
Taking you to the threshold of a dream and beyond. Seventh Wave Network.
Never before in the history of live radio have such illuminating revelations challenged everything we thought we knew about the hidden realms. This exceptional mystic, seer, and healer creates a truly amazing bridge across the chasm that has separated man for eons from the unseen worlds of mystery. Join host Al Mean for an extraordinary and enlightening hour by Walking Between the Worlds on Voice America's Seventh Wave Network. Walking Between the Worlds airs live every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
The new home for visionary positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today I have with me Eileen Chapman. She's from a suburb of Melbourne, Australia, and is speaking to us from there. So in case you hear an echo, you will know that this is our telephone airwaves just echoing across the Pacific Ocean. the question has come up for me about how this was handled when Reiki was being introduced into this drug assessment and rehabilitation program, and about this quality of care that also has this mandate in it about touching. So I'm wondering how you guys handled that.
It wasn't really a problem in most instances. When people come in to detox and go through rehabilitation, they reached a stage in their lives where they will really try anything to recover. Occasionally, it's not like that. Occasionally, they've been sent there by the courts, or they've come there instead of having to go to prison, and they've been, you know, because they've been involved in drug-related crime. But even they really want to have a change and take the opportunity that's provided with Wendana. So they come in and they're really so full of pain, stress. You know, they have the shakes. They will have a lot of pain, which they're feeling, which the drugs have been masking. They're suffering from anxiety, a whole range of things which are connected to drug withdrawal, and they're so desperate that they will really try anything. However, and of course, once you put your hands on them, then the Reiki takes over and makes them feel safe and protected. People will often say, I felt like I was wrapped in a cocoon of warmth, all these things which we know about in Reiki. So that wasn't a problem. Occasionally, there would be people who had problems because of the background of their background of abuse and violence.
Yes.
And so touch to them was something that they were very nervous of because they'd never experienced any kind touch. And touch was equated with violence for them. So we would have to, we eventually began to ask the staff to let us know if somebody was in such a situation, because unfortunately most of the abusers are male, so they were very wary of having male touch. So if we had male practitioners, we would ask them would they prefer to have a female practitioner to start with, and then eventually once they became familiar with the clinic and feeling safe with the Reiki, it was a great healing for them to experience unconditional caring touch from a male practitioner. So that was all part of the process.
Beautiful.
And so that it really has never been a problem there having touch. They might have had apprehension, which they didn't express to us when they came in, but they were so apprehensive about so many things that we just would put our hands on them. And really that first touch from a practitioner, when you place your hands on a Reiki person, and you place your hands on, it's unconditional, you're out of the way. You've got your own feelings out of the way, and you just touch them with compassion, not feeling sorry for them, but with compassion. Then there's that inner connection which makes them feel safe.
But do you think that, this is kind of going off on a tangent, but do you think that there are, what can I say, recommendations that you would make to people who would like to get, go forward into this population and treat them, things that they could do as practitioners that would make the experience of Reiki be more clear for the people who are...
To make it more clear.
Well, to make it more clear and to also prepare themselves for... I don't know. I always think that there are some kind of special things to remember when you're treating certain conditions. And I would think that drug and alcohol recovery programs would be one of these situations. Am I totally crazy or...
No, not at all. With what I learned, Phyllis, and what we all learned in the clinic as practitioners was that the requirements for being in the clinic were really a metaphor for any Reiki treatment. But with the emphasis that even more so, right? Because the people are more vulnerable. But it was a great learning for us to take out into our private practice, because there's a realization that everybody, when they give themselves to Reiki, is vulnerable. You know, you lie down on a table. I don't know about you, but I lie down on a table to receive Reiki. And there's a vulnerability about that. You're totally surrendering yourself to the process.
Right.
I do it quite happily now, of course, but one can still be vulnerable, especially if somebody behaves inappropriately. So with treating people in the drug and alcohol area who are very, very vulnerable, one of the important things is to help them to feel that they have some measure of control.
Mm-hmm.
So we make doubly sure that they are offered an explanation of Reiki, a brief one, beforehand. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't want it. They just say, oh, no, you know, they try more or less fling themselves on the table and say, do whatever it is that you do. And then afterwards, because of their experience, then they really want to know about it.
Uh-huh.
However, we always offer them an explanation before we start.
Mm-hmm.
We are very careful to tell them how we're going to treat them,
mm-hmm.
and ask them, are they okay with that? Because there might be some areas that they don't want to be touched. For example, mm-hmm. if somebody has been physically abused, they might have an area that, like the stomach or somewhere which... they just cannot bear to be touched. So in the beginning,
right.
we'll hold your hands over that area. So you need to know those things. Then with making them comfortable, we place a sheet or a blanket, depending on the weather. We might put a little tissue over their eyes so that they can relax and not feel they're being stared at.
Mm-hmm.
And we always mm-hmm. ask them, are you comfortable with this? Are you comfortable
mm-hmm.
with having a tissue over your eyes? Let us know if you're not comfortable. You know, let us know if you are too hot or too cold, or if there's anything you want. And
mm-hmm.
this allows them to feel in control.
Mm-hmm.
It also allows them to feel nurtured. Now, of course, we
mm-hmm.
do that ideally in our private practice and
mm-hmm.
in our personal practice, but it's doubly important with people in this
mm-hmm.
in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I think it's really important that somebody has accountability.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for you, accountability?
Well, we developed, because in the beginning with the Reiki clinic, there were some people who, because it was a lay practice, largely then a personal practice.
Mm-hmm.
And people hadn't developed practitioner skills, ethics, the things that are common to any practice which is taken out into the public,
mm-hmm.
whether it's Reiki or Shiatsu or massage or whatever. There are certain practitioner ethics, and because people hadn't been exposed to that, there was a certain lack of boundaries. And this can happen with people who haven't been trained for public practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't turn away anybody in the for Reiki in the clinic. Once they'd given us a treatment and we'd had to talk with them, etc. But it began to be clear to me that some people, although the Reiki was safe, their practice wasn't safe. You know, they were starting to interpret the person's experiences. They were talking too much rather than listening to them after a
mm-hmm.
treatment, or, rather than just being present for them. A whole range of things. So this began to feel not safe, and a couple of other people there, one who was a psychologist, started saying to me, "Eileen, you know, you really need to do something about this." And at that stage, it wasn't my clinic; it was our clinic. But I fell into this role because it was asked of me, and because I could see there was a need. So then it became my clinic, and we developed.
That was kind of subtle and kind of...
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, so we developed certain rules, which we called golden rules. That is, that we didn't give anybody readings, whether you call them psychic readings or message
right.
from the higher self or whatever.
Right, right.
Simply because Windana didn't feel comfortable with that. And we had to be accountable to Windana because they were responsible for the people in their care. We didn't offer any diagnosis or any form of prognosis. We didn't offer any counselling. All those really basic things. And
right.
So that there had to be somebody supervising to make sure that was all. All in place. So then we were having a debriefing after the clinic. That is, we would all get together once each day's clinic was finished, and we would, in confidence, because confidentiality was an important protocol of the clinic, we
right.
would share the treatments. You know, what had happened for the practitioner themselves, their feelings about it, the process, what had come up for the client, their responses, etc. And so then we were able to talk about how something might be managed better, what might mm-hmm. have been perhaps not quite so appropriate, etc. And this provided a great learning, as you can imagine, for all the participants, including me. I think I was the one who had to learn the most.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
We then realized that the staff in the drug withdrawal house really needed to be aware of some of the issues that were coming up for the residents, which hadn't been which they weren't talking about in the process in the drug withdrawal house.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would do a handover. The supervisor or someone designated by the supervisor would do a handover to a staff member after mm-hmm. each clinic.
Yep.
And
great.
that provided accountability from the practitioners, the supervisor, through to the drug withdrawal house.
Uh-huh.
And that also provided a wonderful link between the drug withdrawal house and dialogue and the clinic, and a greater awareness of the Reiki, what the Reiki was doing, apart from occasional reports from the clients. And of course, we had to be very mindful of confidentiality, because the people who exposed their thoughts and feelings and experiences to us in the clinic if it was something very private, they wouldn't necessarily perhaps want it to go back directly to a staff member.
Well, for and, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So and I need to just interrupt you a minute, hon.
Yes.
We're at a break time.
Okay.
So we'll just continue this flow when we get back. Thanks, Eileen, for this great summary. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Awakened Media for a transforming world. Seventh Wave Network.
Create a life with growth, balance, abundant peace of mind, and joy. Tune in and call into Spirits Evolving with pragmatic psychic and certified hypnotherapist, Lee Channing. By using the simple tools for growth offered by Lee, including intuition, color awareness, creative visualization, and more, build a stronger understanding of your own energy and offer clear, unencumbered energy to those with whom you share your life. Whether for an individual or a business, home environment, or your office, Lee evaluates and interacts with the energy at hand, providing an analysis of the problem and a description of the options available to move forward successfully and with grace. Spirits Evolving with Lee Channing, broadcast each Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Seventh Wave Network, your online community for positive change. Spirits Evolving, your guide toward a life filled with more balance, intention, and contentment.
Listening on a higher dimension. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And today I have with me Eileen Chapman, who has been a founder of a Reiki clinic for a drug recovery program, drug and alcohol recovery program, in around Melbourne, Australia. And one of the things that I would just like to say to our listeners is that, Australia is a very interesting country. I find that when Reiki was introduced in the 1980s in Australia, as with a lot of other countries, it spread like what I would call wildfire. And one of the things that has happened in Australia is that it's the application of Reiki in its, healthcare programs has been very beautiful and, for the most part, very smooth. Now, they are also very systematic about the way that these treatments are presented in the public, and there's much more care and perhaps understanding about what a public practitioner needs to know in order to practice in the public. And I feel like for those of you who might have been a little overwhelmed by Eileen's speaking about accountability, this is a piece that I feel like really is lacking in a lot of new age therapy or alternative therapy modalities, that there's a feeling sometimes that because we're working with what some people might call unconditional love, or we're working with things that are universal in nature, or that are sort of love and light in this area, that accountability is not necessary because only bring good things or can only assist people in their healing. And that may be true, but the point of accountability has to do, in my book, with the actual practitioner, and there always needs to be a practitioner between what is being offered and what is being received. And for me, that's where accountability lies. It's not in actually the energy of Reiki. So I want to make this clear, and I'm wondering, I mean, if that feels congruent to your experience.
You're asking me that, Phyllis. Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I agree with that totally. That there is no accountability with Reiki. Reiki, the energy, is totally safe. We've all known and experienced that for years. It is in the delivery of it and with the practitioner that many things can arise.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
That is the area of accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like
that you have established great systems of what we would call in the state supervision, which means that, you know, this practice of coming together at the end of the day and talking about the treatments and being able to refer people to other practitioners and so on is all about supervision.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because things might come up in the clinic. Occasionally, we would get somebody who was manifesting suicidal ideation. That is, they'd been having suicidal thoughts, etc., which they only came out with when they'd had a Reiki treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because at that stage I hadn't trained in dealing with that sort of situation, I have since then, and I think it's a good thing for all Reiki practitioners to do in the public arena, actually, because we can all come up against that situation at times. But we needed, because the Windana was responsible, we needed to let them know immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately. I didn't wait till the end of the day. If this was the first hour of treatments, then whoever was treating would report that to me straight away, and I would straight away go over to the house and not leave it for a couple of hours, because in the meantime, that person could discharge themselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So a whole range of things that required accountability. And also for the supervisor, because sometimes, you know, things would come up that were specifically related to Windana. So I would go to somebody in Windana and they would provide it somebody for me to have supervision with if I needed it,
mm-hmm.
that I could go and discuss issues with.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a Reiki issue, then I might discuss it with a Reiki colleague or my Reiki master, who at that
mm-hmm.
time was Claudia. Because I later moved into another practice, and that's another story. If it was things coming up in me, then we used to talk it through with a psychologist friend. So I had a range of support for me, because I felt that was my accountability. Because just simply because I was the supervisor didn't mean that I was God and I had all wisdom.
Good point.
And I had all wisdom and knowledge. I needed to sort things out for myself too, with assistance at times.
Right. Wonderful. So can we? I just want to shift the focus a little bit right now. And
sure.
Go to the actual treatment. Did you find that there were certain positions or certain focuses that you would recommend to the Reiki practitioners that they pay attention to during the treatments, or did you just do what we might call the regular standard treatment of, you know, treatment positions around the head and the chest and the abdomen and the back? I'm just wondering if there was there were patterns of treatment positions that you might have used that were different.
Not at all, no. We've always used the treatment sequence of whatever lineage the student is trained in.
Great.
We've had people from different backgrounds in there,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
who've worked with respectfully and comfortably with one another. So it was always, we always had just the basic sequence, because it's a holistic, it is a holistic practice. And I didn't like to break it up and say, and medicalize it, so to speak.
Right.
Because somebody might be suffering from headaches, and as we know, a headache can be coming from the liver imbalance, it can be coming from colon problems, it can be coming from an upset stomach, it could be coming from tensions in the neck and shoulders. And as we know, the Reiki will flow to wherever it's needed. So we always did a full sequence treatment, and sometimes I had to be hurried up a bit because we would be a bit short of time for various reasons. And then that would, and then people would go back and perhaps treat somewhere else that they were drawn to. I would leave it to the practitioner's intuition, or if the person had come in and said, you know, I have had I've got a terribly sore knee, then of course we would pay attention to the knee. So really, it was just as you would treat anybody who came to you for Reiki.
Great. And did you use the second degree additional treatment processes, like the what we call the mental treatment, or distant treatments within this treatment practice?
We didn't use the distant treatments, but we did occasionally, that we just felt that somebody was very much in need of Reiki and would find it difficult to struggle through to the next week, and so one of us would contract to send distant treatments to them. But that wasn't very common. But we did and do commonly use the second degree treatment for peace of mind, mental treatment, whatever we like to call it. Yes,
peace of mind. That's important. Well, great. Well, thank you for this. So. Unbelievably, I can hardly believe it myself, we are at another break.
Awesome.
So, we'll come back in just a few moments. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.
Be extraordinary. Seventh Wave Network.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The law of attraction is very much in today's public awareness. In reality, it is not a new concept. Join Liana Carbone for Living Wisdom, the Art of Shamanism and Spirituality. Discover the roots of the law of attraction and go beyond its theories to manifest a life of balance and prosperity. Living Wisdom can be heard each Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network. Come join us to dream, learn, and heal.
Hey, how you doing? Educational videos, top quality, right here.
You'll never hear anyone selling education on the street. But with free family learning programs, you can get the education you need. Call 1-877-FAMLIT1 for information on free learning programs. 1-877-FAMLIT1.
Check it out. Win your GED right here, guaranteed, ma. Come on, check it out.
Free family learning programs from the National Center for Family Literacy. Brought to you by the National Center for Family Literacy and the Ad Council.
Your online community for positive change. Seventh Wave Network.
You're listening to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence with Phyllis Furumoto. If you have a question for either Phyllis or her guests, call now. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5795. That's 1-866-472-5795. Now, back to the show.
This is Phyllis Furumoto
with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. And today, I have with me Eileen Chapman from, she lives near Melbourne, Australia, and has founded and worked with a Reiki clinic within a drug and alcohol recovery center. And we've covered a lot of ground today, particularly about the preparation and protocol around giving treatment. We've just gotten into the treatment process, which she says is just the usual. So, Eileen, I have a question that comes up in me, and perhaps will be of interest to the listeners. I'm wondering if you can, if there is a gift that has been given to you I wonder about the gifts that come to you as a practitioner in working with these people and in their very delicate processes.
There are a few gifts. I think the greatest gift was, and I was talking to one of the participants just recently, and she reminded me of this because it was so for her also, and I think it is for most of us who commit to a long time in the clinic, is that we learn something more about compassion. Now, compassion is not pity or feeling sorry for. I suppose it can include those things too, but it is compassion is a wisdom, as I see it, a wisdom that comes from the heart. It's not something that you perceive from outside. It's something that you really feel, and it's really quite transforming for the person who begins to really understand and experience the compassion. The gift was that it taught me, I was speaking for myself here, not to see other persons as the other.
Right.
And I still have to remind myself of this in daily life. I haven't become a saint overnight, but it has triggered this in me. And I, because people who come in for Reiki, sometimes we used to say, oh, really, you know, they looked when they came in as if their mothers couldn't love them because they're so full of anger and sometimes even hatred of themselves, full of guilt, full of pain, full of despair, which can make them behave and look to be unattractive. Then the transformation in the practitioner in laying their hands on somebody who then just, you know, this person who's come in looking like this and behaving like this, who then surrenders to the Reiki. It touches you so deeply, and it's not something that comes from your head, and you really feel at one with that person. And you begin to realize, or I began to realize, you know, with the different life circumstances, this is me.
Right.
This is not someone else. This is me. And I remember one day there was a beautiful young woman who came in. She was clearly well educated, and tall and slender and dark, attractive, and full of the pain and despair of her addiction, her drug abuse. And I looked at her and I thought, she looks just like my beautiful daughter. And she even had, strangely enough, the same name. And I thought, yes, yeah. And I thought, this could be my beautiful child, you know. And then I realized that, in a sense, she was my beautiful child.
Mm-hmm. That you, because you feel at one with them. I don't mean to say that you have this codependency where you feel you need the person and they need you, and you have this, you hook into it. Because once the treatment is finished and you've done the debriefing, then you let it all go. You don't carry it around with you. But for that time, you're at one with that person totally. And although I had felt this in my private practice, because of the background of the people we were treating, it was something deeper. Because, you know, it's easy to feel compassion for somebody who's attractive and, you know, has just had something unfortunate happen to them, and you feel deserves compassion. We can, it's
right.
easy for us to,
exactly.
But we can look, and I began to, this began to affect me when I saw people in the street that looked, you know, unattractive in some way, in an objective sense. And I thought, now, if I knew that story, that person's story, and I placed my hands on them, they would be just like that person that I treated in the clinic.
Right.
You know? And I would feel at one with them. So, yeah, it was a really a great deepening of my experience of compassion. And help, I suppose, developing a sense of wisdom around Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, does that sound clear?
Yeah, totally, and very beautiful. I really appreciate this point, because I feel that it's very easy to have our assumptions and our ideas about who people are, and they, as you said, they can be the others. And eventually, when they come into us, and this magical thing that happens when you put your hands on and treat somebody else, and this feeling of oneness, you know, people often ask, well, what is the limitation of Reiki? And I see in this moment that you could ask this question or answer it in the way of saying, well, there is no limitation of oneness. You don't get to be one with those people you like and then not one with the people that you don't like. don't approve of.
Or I will have some compassion for you, but not for you.
Yeah, exactly. And I just see that Reiki takes that out of our hands, as it were, and allows us to really see the gamut of human interaction and human possibility. And that possibility runs from one extreme to the other in a full circle. And I feel what a beautiful reminder of this particular circle. Thank you so much.
I think that really an important aspect of it is respect, too. You know, you can't have true compassion without respect.
Exactly.
So, and this means that when we're practicing Reiki, we're not standing above as the wonderful Reiki practitioner who is, you know, bestowing all these great gifts and this wonderful energy, which it is. But if we are looking at respect, then we're and compassion, then we're coming from an equal place. And it's also important for us to have compassion and respect for ourselves, compassion for our own journey in life, because that's acknowledging that we have our own pains, our own struggles, our own learning, you know, our own difficulties. And so if we acknowledge that need for compassion in ourselves, then we are meeting with whomever we treat, whoever it is, from a point of equality.
Yes, I totally agree with this. And it's a beautiful place to end.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for coming and being with us on the air today and sharing with us with such openness. And it's inspired me to dig a little deeper next time I have some judgments about people that look a bit scary for me. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Yes, you're welcome. This is Phyllis Furumoto
with Reiki, balancing form and essence.
We hope that you've enjoyed today's episode of Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Be sure to tune in every Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Seventh Wave Network and discover how you can find balance from within.